The Invisible Man by H.G. Wells. Chapter 19. Certain First Principles. "What's the matter?" asked Kempt when the Invisible Man admitted him.
"Nothing,"
was the answer.
"But confound it, the smash!" "Fit of temper," said the Invisible Man. "Forgot this arm and it's sore."
"You're rather liable to that sort of thing."
"I am."
Kemp walked across the room and picked up the fragments of broken glass. "All the facts are out about you," said Kemp, standing up with the glass in his hand. "All that happened in Iping and down the hill, the world has become aware of its invisible citizen. But no one knows you're here." The Invisible Man swore.
"The secret's out. I gather it was a secret. I don't know where your plans are, but of course I'm anxious to help you."
The Invisible Man sat down on the bed. "There's breakfast upstairs," said Kemp, speaking as easily as possible, and he was delighted to find his strange guest rose willingly. Kemp led the way up the narrow staircase to the Belvedere. "Before we can do anything else," said Kemp, "I must understand a little more about this invisibility of yours." He had sat down. After one nervous glance out the window, with the air of a man who was talking to do, his doubts of the sanity of the entire business flashed and vanished again as he looked across the street to where Griffin sat at the breakfast table. A headless, handless dressing gown, wiping unseen lips on a miraculously held serviette.
"It's simple enough, incredible enough," said Griffin,
putting aside the serviette and leaning the invisible head on an invisible hand.
"No doubt to you, but," Kemp laughed. "Well, yes, to me it seemed wonderful at first, no doubt, but now, great God, but we would do great things yet. I came on the stuff first at Chesilstowe."
"Chesilstowe?"
"I went there after I left London. You know, I dropped medicine and took up physics, no?" "Well, I did. Light fascinated me."
"Ah.
Optical density. The whole subject is a network of resonance. My network with the solutions glimmering elusively through. And being but 22 and full of enthusiasm, I said, I will devote my life to this. This is worthwhile. You know what fools we are at 22.
"Fools then or fools now," said Kemp.
"As though knowing could be any satisfaction to a man. But I went to work like a slave, and I had hardly worked and thought about the matter 6 months before light came through one of the meshes suddenly, blindingly. I found a general principle of pigments and refraction, a formula, a geometrical expression involving four dimensions. Fools, common men, even common mathematicians, do not know anything of what some general expression may mean to the student of molecular physics. In the books that Tramp has hidden, they are marvels, miracles. But this was not a method. It was an idea that might lead to a method by which it would be possible, without changing any other property of the matter, except in some instances colors, to lower the refractive index of a substance, solid or liquid, to that of air, so far as all practical purposes are concerned.
Phew, said Kemp. That's old.
But I still don't see... Well, I can understand thereby you could spoil a valuable stone, but a personal invisibility is a far cry.
Precisely, said Griffin.
But consider, visibility depends on the action of invisible bodies on light. Either a body absorbs lights, or it reflects or refracts it, or does all of these things. If it neither reflects nor absorbs light, it cannot itself be visible. You see an opaque red box, for instance, because the color absorbs some of the light and reflects the rest. All the red part of the light to you. If it did not absorb any particular part of the box, but reflected at all, then it would be a shining white box, silver. A diamond box would neither absorb much of the light nor reflect much from the general surface, but just here and there, where the surface were favorable, the light would be reflected and refracted, so that you would get a brilliant appearance of flashing reflections and translucencies, a sort of skeleton of light. A glass box would not be so brilliant, not so clearly visible as a diamond box, because there would be less reflection and reflection. See that, from certain points of view, you could see quite clearly through it. Some kinds of glass would be more visible than others. A box of flint glass would be brighter than a box of ordinary window glass. A box of very thin common glass would be hard to see in bad light because it would absorb hardly any light and refract and reflect very little. And if you put a sheet of common white glass in water, still more if you put it in some denser liquid than water, it would vanish almost altogether, because light passing from water to glass is only slightly refracted or reflected or indeed affected in any way. It is almost as invisible as a jet of coal gas or hydrogen is in air, and for precisely the same reason.
Yes, said Kemp, that's pretty plain sailing.
And here's another fact you know to be true. If a sheet of glass is smashed, Kemp, and beaten into a powder, it becomes much more visible while it is in the air. it becomes at last an opaque white powder. This is because the powdering multiplies the surfaces of the glass at which refraction and reflection occur. In the sheet of glass, there are only two surfaces. In the powder, the light is reflected or refracted by each grain it passes through, and very little gets right through the powder. But if the white powdered glass is put into water, it forthwith vanishes. The powdered glass and water have very much the same refractive index. That is, the light undergoes very little refraction or reflection in passing from one to the other. You make the glass invisible by putting it into a liquid of nearly the same refractive index. A transparent thing becomes invisible if it is put in any medium of almost the same refractive index. And if you will consider only a second, you will see that the powder of glass might be made to vanish in air if its refractive index could be made the same as that of air. For then there would be no refraction or reflection as the light passed from the glass to air.
"Yes, yes," said Kemp, "but a man's not powdered glass."
"No," said Griffin, "he's more transparent."
"Nonsense."
"That from a doctor, how one forgets. Have you already forgotten your physics in 10 years? Just think of all the things that are transparent and seem not to be so. Paper, for instance, is made up of transparent fibers, and it is white and opaque for only the same reason that a powder of glass is white and opaque. Oil-white paper fill up the interstices between the particles with oil, so that there is no longer refraction or reflection except at the surfaces, and it becomes as transparent as glass. And not only paper, but cotton fiber, linen fiber, woolby fiber, and bone, Kemp. Flesh, Kemp. Hair, Kemp. Nails and nerves, Kemp. In fact, the whole fabric of a man, except the red of his blood and the black pigment of hair, are all made up of transparent, colorless tissue. So little suffices to make us visible to one another. For the most part of the fibers of a living creature are no more opaque than water.
"Good heavens," cried Kemp. "Of course, of course. I was thinking only last night of the sea larva and all the jellyfish.
Now you have me. And all that I knew, I had in mind a year after I left London. 6 years ago, but I kept it to myself. I had to do my work under frightful disadvantages. Oliver, my professor, was a scientific bounder, a journalist by instinct, a thief of ideas. He was always prying. And you know the knavish system of the scientific world. I simply would not publish and let him share my credit. I went on working, and I got nearer and nearer to making my formula into an experiment, a reality. I told no living soul, because I meant to flash my work upon the world with crushing effect and become famous at a blow. I took up the question of pigments to fill up certain gaps, and suddenly, not by design but by accident, I made a discovery in physiology. Yes? You know the red colouring matter of blood. It can be made white, colourless, and remain with all the functions it has now." Kemp gave a cry of incredulous amazement. The invisible man rose and began pacing at the little study. "You may exclaim, I remember that night. It was late at night. In the daytime, one was bothered with the gaping, silly students, and I worked then sometimes till dawn. It came suddenly, splendid and complete in my mind. I was alone. The laboratory was still, with the lights tall burning brightly and silently. In my great moments, I have been alone. One could make it edible, a tissue transparent. One could make it invisible, all except the pigments. I could be invisible," I said, suddenly realizing what it meant to be an albino with such knowledge. It was overwhelming. I left the filtering I was doing and went and stared out of the great window at the stars. "I could be invisible," I repeated. "To do such a thing would transcend magic." And I beheld, unclouded by doubt, a magnificent vision of all that invisibility might mean to a man. The mystery, the power, the freedom. Drawbacks I saw none. You have only to think. And I, a shabby, poverty-struck, hemmed-in demonstrator, teaching fools in provincial college, might suddenly become... This, I ask you, Kemp, if you, anyone, I tell you, would have flung himself upon that research. And I worked 3 years, and every mountain of difficulty I toiled over showed another from its summit. The infinite details and the exasperation. A professor, a provincial professor, always prying. "When are you going to publish this book of yours?" was his everlasting question. And the students, the cramped means, 3 years I had of it. After 3 years of secrecy and exasperation, I find that to complete it was impossible. Impossible!
How? Asked Kemp.
Money, said the invisible man, and went out to
stare out the window.
He turned around abruptly. I robbed the old man. Robbed my father. The money was not his, and he shot himself.
End of chapter 19. Read by David Russell. For Lit to Go. Available on the web at fcit.usf.edu.